Gainesville, Florida, November 13th, 1990. 15 minutes into that first morning of the custody battle for my pinky, the tiny tremor simply would not stop. Maybe if I ignored it for a while. I went into the bathroom, pulled open the mirrored door of the medicine cabinet, found a bottle of Tylenol and dry swallowed two. Standing in front of the larger vanity mirror, I held up my left hand, as if by studying its reflection I might gain a little objectivity. No such luck. Now there were two twitching pinkies. The pills weren't going down. I padded out to the kitchen, pulled a ginger ale from the refrigerator, and wandered into the sitting room. Hair in revolt, eyes at half-mast, I stood buck-naked in the center of the pseudo-luxurious presidential suite, doing everything short of talking to my hand like Senior Wences. Hell, forget Senior Wences, I was about 5 pounds of fingernails short of an end-stage Howard Hughes. I continued wandering from room to room, as if a solution might appear around the next corner, all the while trying a variety of strategies to impose my dominion over this digit. I pinched and pulled it. I pinned it to the nightstand with the Gideon's Bible. I folded it into a fist and held it flat against my chest, and always the result was the same. It would submit to whatever hold I applied, but 4 or 5 seconds after I let up, away it would go again. Frustrated to the point of wanting to amputate, I was convinced that that would only mean having to watch the little bugger skitter across the carpet, like an extra from a Roger Corman movie. For Christ's sake, Mike, I tried to tell myself, it's just your freaking finger. But that was just the point. It wasn't mine. It was somebody else's. My pinky was possessed. Perspective was key, though, and since I'd clearly lost mine, it was time to avail myself of someone else's. I called Bridget, my assistant. Trying my best not to sound panicky, I casually mentioned that I might be having a minor physiological reaction to something. I described what was happening to my finger. She scared the hell out of me by suggesting that it sounded to her like a neurological problem, and did I want to speak to her brother, who happened to be a brain surgeon up in Boston. No, that's okay, I really don't think it's that big a deal, I said, trying to convince myself as much as her. I'll just give Tracy a call. Bridget may have had a doctor in the family, but in Tracy, I had the next best thing, a hypochondriac. By that, I don't mean she's an obsessive-compulsive, doom-and-gloom, stay-in-bed-with-the-covers-pulled-over-her-head neurotic who spends her spare time taking her own blood pressure. She's not crazy, just a little sensitive to the subtlest fluctuation in her health, not to mention the health of all those around her. As long as I've known her, she's owned the latest edition of the Columbia School of Medicine Encyclopedia of Health and has an uncanny knack for matching symptoms with life-threatening diseases. While I was in Florida, Tracy had remained in Manhattan with Sam. I reached her by telephone that morning at the gym. Tracy was just about to start a workout, but she encouraged me to take my time and explain in complete detail exactly what I was experiencing. Without sounding at all patronizing, she promised me that what I was describing didn't fit the profile of any disease, affliction, or injury that she was familiar with. I was relieved to hear this and clung to her assurance that the episode would almost certainly pass and be forgotten by the end of the day. Had I ever been this patient and empathetic with her? So many times I'd dismissed her fears. That's a freckle, Tracy, not a malignant melanoma. No, you're not going deaf. It's called swimmer's ear. I felt guilty, but I felt better. She was right. This was nothing. It would blow over. I was fine. We traded I love you and miss you's, but just as I was about to hang up, as an afterthought, she quickly added, you know, Bridget's brother is a brain surgeon. Why don't you give him a call? Just for the hell of it. Shit.